Fine. So on Thursday, we very carefully read through the Gemara, and we'd left off with the question of whether the halacha of lighting Hanukkah candles twice, mishum chshad, whether we should properly look at this as an expansion of the general obligation of chshad. But just like in general, we are concerned what people think, so here too, we're worried about it. Or if this in some way is a localized halacha, it actually integrates into the laws of Hadlakat Ner Chanukah. And we noted that one of the things that suggests the latter formulation is the bizarre proof from Peah, which instead of quoting all the psukim that we have from Chshad in general and Shkalim, we quote Peah, and by Peah, this is a philosophical rule for a legal reality, right? Where this is already the law, meaning the reason that you give Peah from the corner is not because of Chshad, it's because God said it's the corner. The question is, why did God say it's the corner? But that indicates that what the Gemara is doing, or possibly, is explaining the parameters of the law itself rather than some external obligation. And that was really the main question that we had left off on. So that's the one I want to pick up with, which is, okay, once we've laid out these possibilities that either when we say you have to light twice, mishum chshad, that's simply a function of our general obligation, or is this unique to Hanukkah? Now, we said there are certain quantitative differences, right? You could say that really this is just chshad. The reason you need a different pasuk and different argument is to say that this is quantitatively different, so you wouldn't have known that the scope of this chiyuv was like it is, meaning there's no obligation to others in the case of the Peah, in the case of the Shkolim case there is, or maybe it's your obligation to call Yisrael versus to the local city or whatever, all types of, but it could be at the end of the day, even with a different pasuk, this is still a function of the general obligation of chshad. The pasuk or the proof here comes to expand the scope of chshad. Or you say, no, this is qualitatively something different. Okay? So, the first possible test for this conceptual question is the question of bracha. Right? Is the question of bracha possible? Okay? So, what does the Ran say about this halacha? Right? The Ran is, right, weighs in directly about the bracha. And what does he say? You do not make a bracha when you light the second candles, mishum chshad. And what's his argument? Why is that true? Thank you. Because you're only learning for chshad, i.e., you're not lighting for the mitzvah of hadlakat ner Chanukah, right? The Ran says, umistabra, it seems, it makes sense to say, dechevon she'eno madlik ela mishum cheshada lo mivarech ela achad pitcha. Since you're only lighting mishum cheshad, you only light the first one of the bracha, but not the second time. Okay? Yes, Yonatan. One second. Let's read the Ran. Right? The Ran claims, let's focus on the Ran. The Ran says you don't make a bracha. And why don't you make a bracha? Because you're only lighting mishum chshad. So what does the Ran pretty clearly hold? Right? The Ran is pretty clear about what he holds. Right? In our formulation, does he think that when you say you light mishum chshad, that is a localized halacha in Hilchos Chanukah? Or is this simply a function of the universal concern of chshad? Right, what is the Ran? The Ran seems pretty clear. It's universal. And therefore, this is not Hadlakat Ner Chanukah. It's just not. Who holds differently? And I want to be very careful. Who seems to hold differently? Who holds differently? The Rajba, let's see in a second. Who definitely holds differently? And let's analyze whether we think he's right. What? The Prichadash. Right? The Bichadish understands the Rajba differently, but let's be very careful with how he gets there, okay? So, Let's start with the Rashba. Why does the Pichadash think that the Rashba disagrees with the Ran? So what does the Rashba say? So the Rashba has asked the following question, right? So the Rashba, let's remind ourselves who we're talking about. Who is the Rashba? Rishimon ben Aderet, right? Ben Aderet, not ben Avram. That's the Balat Tosfot. This is the Svardi Rashba, right? Who's a Talmud of the Ramban. And in addition to his Perek and Shas, he also writes about 5,000 Shuvot, give or take possibly several thousand. I really don't know. He writes something like 5,000 Shuvot, maybe more. So in the first volume of his Shuvot, in Shuvah 525, Tavkuf Chafei, in just Chelek Aleph, there's like 9 volumes, I think, of Shuvot HaRashba, something like that. It's a lot of Shuvot HaRashba. It's really a lot of Shuvot HaRashba. So he was asked the following. And he writes that in certain cases of Hafrashat Chala. So what is Hafrashat Chala? So whenever you make dough of a certain quantity, right, which comes out to like 5/4 of a kav, which is about 43 1/5 egg worth of it, okay? What? Yeah, anyways. So that much, however much that is, when you make that much dough, so it gets a little bit complicated because technically it's a volume and not a weight, but like if you look at some of the kosher organizations, they'll give you suggestions in terms of weight, which is not technically accurate because it's a volume measurement, but okay. When you make that, you need to be mafrish chala, right? That's how our chala becomes called chala. It's not, our chala is obviously not chala. If it was chala, it would be usher, right? Chala is the portion you give to the kohen. Right, but then we call our challah is fine. It's a loaf, portion. But it's the portion you give to the kohen, it has the kedusha of truma, and you give it to the kohen, and your mafresh challah, fine. So there are cases in which you're obligated, and then there are cases in which you are not technically obligated. So if the dough belongs to a Jew, you're obligated. If it belongs to a non-Jew, you're not obligated. Right, but there are certain sort of combinations, right, where it partially belongs to Jew, partially belongs to non-Jew because of taxes and the like. That's the Arnona case, where we tell you, even though technically you don't have to be mafresh because of the non-Jew's hand in this kala, you have to be mafresh because let le kala. People don't know that it actually belongs to the non-Jew, and therefore you have to be mafresh, okay? That's the Rashba's case. And the Rashba, right, was asked, do you have to make a bracha? Because in the end of the day, you're not really obligated because of the goy's portion in this dough. Why do you have to be mafresh? Because people don't know that the goy has a hand in this challah. Okay? Let's just get the Rashba down, and then I'll take your question, Ezra. That was case one. His second was the shchita of a ben pakua. What's a ben pakua? Right. If you shech the animal and there is a viable fetus in there, so forever that viable fetus is on a d'oraita level considered shechted, right? It's considered shechted, it's considered parev, all types of wonderful things, right? It's a very unique case. Yes, you can eat it while it's alive, mi d'oraita, because it's shechted. Jews can, non-Jews can't. Very complicated story, but lumdishly, because Jews, one, seem to be obligated to or forbidden to eat a non-shachut, and it is shachut, right? It's the one case where it might be alive, but shachut. And therefore, Jews will be permitted, but for non-Jews it won't, because their standard is chai, and our standard is shachut. Okay, it's a very interesting halacha. I think Gavi gave chabur on it last year. Oh, Gavi was supposed to give chabur on it last year, and we'll give chabur to you privately if you ask him so nicely. Right, Gavi? Okay, there you go. So, and he'll give it to anybody else. It's a fascinating, fascinating sugya. Yeah? But midrabanan, because of Maranayan, we tell you have to shecht it. So his question was, in both of these cases, do you have to make a bracha on the hafrashat challah of the arnona and on the shechita of the ben pakua? What's his answer?
Yes.
Kol shechicha chamim lahafrisha l'shchod me'ezetam she'amru mitzvah shel devrei mihi. whenever the rabbi said you have to do anything, for whatever reason they said it, it is a rabbinic mitzvah, and therefore you have to make a bracha on it. Okay? So, does the Rashba say anything about Hanukkah? No, he says nothing about Hanukkah. Ezra, what was your question? Right. So the Pri Chodesh then deals with the question of whether you have to make a bracha on the shechita of a ben pakua. So he notes that in one place the Rashba sounds like you do not, but in the Tshuva, the Rashba says you do, because it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Okay. Then he gets into the question of, then he says, well, I think that the Ran would disagree, and would say you do not shecht. You don't make a bracha when you shecht the ben pakua. What's his proof? The case of Hanukkah. By the case of Hanukkah. Where the Ran says that since you're lighting Mishum Chshad, so you don't have to make a bracha. So the Pri Chodesh thinks that the Rashba would argue with the Ran, right? Meaning, right, that's what's implied in the Pri Chodesh, right? Is that the Rashba and the Ran represent two visions. Where the Ran says you don't light, you don't make a bracha when something Mishum Chshad, and the Rashba would think you do. But let's be very careful. Why does the Pri Chodesh think that according to the Rashba, you would make a bracha? Is it because he thinks this is the normal rule of Chshad or not? Well, I don't know, right? Meaning the Pri Chodesh claims, right, that the Rashba seems to think that, right, that any time there's something Mishum Chshad, you have to make a bracha midirabanan. But there's two ways of understanding that Rashba, right? One way of saying understanding the Rashba is that even if you have to do something Mishum Chshad, in the end of the day, it's a mitzvah derabanan. Meaning once the rabbis instituted something, it doesn't matter why they instituted it, it's a mitzvah derabanan. You have to make a bracha. But that tells us nothing about whether the lighting of the Hanukkah candles would be a localized halacha or an expression of the general Chshad, right? It could be that the Ran in general thinks, right? The way the Pri Chodesh takes it is that whenever anything is Mishum Chshad, the Ran thinks it's not really a Tachana d'Rabbanan. It's not really a mitzvah. It's just like a concern. And the Rashba conceptualizes anything that's motivated by Chshad as a mitzvah d'Rabbanan and therefore requires a bracha. But that tells us nothing about whether it's a localized or universal concern of Chshad. It just tells you that the way the Pri Chodesh understands it is whenever the rabbis instituted something Mishum Chshad, the Rashba thinks that it's a formal Takana d'Rabbanan, it's a mitzvah d'Rabbanan. And the Ran thinks that it's not a takana d'rabbanan, it's just like a concern. But it's not a takana, and therefore the Ran says no bracha, and the Rashba says bracha. Right? But there's the possibility that you would distinguish between different cases. Right? And this the Pri Chodesh doesn't raise. Right? It's possible that you wouldn't say the same thing in all cases. Right, it's possible that what? That in any case when the rabbis institute something as the general rule of Chshad, that you would not make a bracha. But whenever they use Chshad as a motivation to mechayev you in a mitzvah, so then you would make a bracha because it integrates into the mitzvah. Now, is the Rashba saying that whenever the rabbi says something, Mishum Shad, you always make a bracha? Maybe, maybe not, right? He might. But think about the two cases that he brings up, right? The challah case and the shechita case. In both of those cases, what's the common denominator? Meaning what?
Meaning,
what do you mean by that? That it's one step down from a deoraita. Give me a different formulation. I mean, what are they, what is he saying?
Meaning, if the shot is that you might be over
and it's a deoraita. You're not going to be over and it's a deoraita. No one thinks you mean over, right? The ben bakua, you can't be over and it's a deoraita. Yeah, but so what? What? Okay, fine, but that's not you. Not you. You won't be over of Daraisa. You, who Shech, not Shech Min Ben Bakua, won't be over Daraisa. No, you're not going to be over. The shot is that someone else will think you're being over, right? Or maybe will themselves end up violating as the Daraisa, not you, right? You're not. You know it's Ben Bakua. But let me put what you're saying differently. In both of these cases, what are we doing? We're saying, mi d'oraita, you're not chayiv in shechita. But mi d'rabanan, you're chayiv in shechita. Mi d'oraita, you're not chayiv in hafrashat challah. But mi d'rabanan, you're chayiv in hafrashat challah. So it could be that the Rashba isn't saying in every single case where there's a chshad, you have to make a bracha. What might he be saying? That whenever mi d'oraita, you're pater from a certain maisa mitzvah. But mi d'rabanan, chshad motivates us to what? Obligate you in that ma'isa mitzvah, then mamela it's a mitzvah derabanan needs a bracha. But maybe even the Rashba could imagine certain cases in which it's just shad, it's not a ma'isa mitzvah, and therefore you would be patur from a bracha. And maybe Gavi's right that the question would be whether the thing in question itself is deoraita to begin with. Right, because if it's d'oraita to begin with, so then you could say, look, mi d'oraita, I'm pater from shechita, mi d'rabanan, I'm chayev. Mi d'oraita, I'm pater from challah, mi d'rabanan, I'm chayev. But maybe when the whole thing is d'rabanan to begin with, that would be a very weird formulation, because what would you say? Right? Mi d'rabanan, I'm pater from Hanukkah, but mi d'rabanan, I'm chayev. That's, like, nonsensical. Right? So it could be that maybe in this case you'd view it as a universal rule of chshad, and then it would not be a bracha because it wouldn't be defined as a lagan ner Chanukah. Maybe. Okay. So, even though this is a little bit, right, tenuous, right, many of the achronim, in fact, essentially accept this analysis at face value and say yes, that the machlokes between the Raj, right, they basically take the Brich Chadash's analysis, and they say that what this teaches you is that the Rajba conceptualizes these issues as the universal, as Chshad. Sorry, if I care. The Ran understands this as the universal Chshad, and therefore you don't need a bracha. And the Rajba will view this as an integration into the Takana itself. Now again, I don't think you have to say that the Ran and the Rajba will necessarily say the same in every case. I think you could imagine the possibility that one thing is true in Challah and in Ben Bakua, and a different thing is true in Hanukkah, right? But it continues to be the case that a potentially good nafkamina to test whether the way you conceptualize our sugya is as a universal concern of chshad or as a localized one, meaning that because of chshad they expanded the mitzvah of Hanukkah itself, a decent test for that conceptual question will be the question of bracha. Okay? That, I think, is true. And many of the achronim really take this approach. However, it's not 100% clear. It's not 100% clear. And the reason is as follows. There are some Rishonim that seem to say, and this I don't want to give you inside, there are some who seem to say that the reason you don't make a bracha is not because it's mishum chshad, but because you light the two at the same time, and therefore your bracha goes on both.
Then just go to make one bracha.
Good. Right? So there seem to be some who think that it's true that you only make one bracha, but it... So tell me conceptually, if someone says that you only make one bracha, but the reason that you only make one bracha is because your original bracha goes on both, how are they conceptualizing the second lighting? Is it simply a function of the general chshad, or is it actually part of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah? What? Right, right. Meaning, those who say that because what are they really saying? Really, you should make a bracha just like doing the first one. The only reason you don't is because of a technicality, which is that you already made the bracha on the first one. That seems to indicate that it is indeed an extension of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, and then at the end of the day, this is right. It's called a mitzvah of Ner Chanukah. Now, what would the logic be to say that you make a bracha, that fundamentally you're really chayiv to make a bracha even on the ner mishum chshad? What would the logic be there? Yeah, Adam. And there are two possible arguments to why you would do that. What are they? Right, therefore, okay. So, again, so why would you think you make a bracha fundamentally? What would the logic be, right? Again, there are two possible logics here, right? What are the logics? One is the way the Rosh presents it, as the Prichadosh understands it, which is, anytime the rabbis tell you to do anything, it doesn't matter what the motivation is, you make a bracha because it's the Rabbanan, right? Yes? The second possibility is that, no, the reason to make a bracha is that this is a unique type of chshad, namely, that in this particular case, lighting the Hanukkah candles isn't just a generic function of chshad, but what is it? It's part of the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah itself, and that's why you make a bracha. But why would you think the latter? Adam, try again. Right? Why would you think that specifically when it comes to Ner Chanukah, chshad isn't an external factor, but it's actually part of the Maisa Mitzvah itself. Right? Say what you said again, but let's push it. Why would you say it? Not bracha. No one ever said anything about bracha. Right? You might suspect you didn't light it at all. Okay, but so what? When no one's going to see you, no one's going to hear you making the bracha. No one's concerned about the bracha. The question is, did you light? Right? So, again, one reason to say that you fundamentally should make a bracha on both lightings is that anytime the rabbis say do anything, make a bracha. But according to people who say, no, the reason you make a bracha here is not because of general concern of chad, but because when it comes to Hanukkah, there's a better reason, just like we saw from Peah, to say that the concern of chad integrates into chiyuv itself and makes the second lighting part of the Maisa Mitzvah of Hanukkah. Why would you say that? What could motivate an argument like that? Leave bracha out of it. Bracha is a reflection of the fact that it's part of the mitzvah. What? So what? So new. So again, you're like the Rashba, right? Adam wants to say like the Rashba, the Pri Chadash, which is, look, in the end of the day, whenever the rabbis tell you to do anything, it's a mitzvah, and therefore you make a bracha, right? This isn't a local Hanukkah thing, right? The Pri Chadash makes a universal argument. That's what Adam's saying, is look, the rabbis said do it, so if they said do it, they said do it. I don't care why they said do it, it's a mitzvah, right? The whole thing is derabanan. I don't care this type of derabanan, that type of derabanan, who cares? It's all derabanan. The rabbi said, do it, it's a mitzvah. So you make a bracha. That's the prichadash. Right? Adam likes the prichadash. Okay, very good. Right? Give me a different reason. Right? Okay, so explain yourself. Thank you. Presuming this is the answer to everything. It's a good answer. But explain what that means here. Right? Let's say you didn't want to say like the Rashba. Right, let's say you didn't want to say like the Prichadash and the Rajma. You wanted to say, look, there is such a thing as a halacha of chshad, which is really just universal, generic, doesn't need a bracha. But because of what we saw already on Thursday, that here we choose not to quote the Pesukim by chshad, but we quote it by Peah. And by Peah, the Pasuk is a reflection of the localized halacha, meaning the chshad in some way helps us formulate the law itself. So maybe there's a localized reason to say that when it comes to Neros Chanukah, Chshad isn't external, but it's internal to that Takana itself. So Adam says, Pirsumei Nisa, the magic words in all of Chanukah. Very good, Adam. Now tell me, what do those magic words mean here? They're very good magic words, but I'm not going to let you get away with magic words. So tell me, what about Pirsumei Nisa would suggest that maybe the lighting of Neros Chanukah Michrum Shad isn't external to the mitzvah, but is internal to the mitzvah, and therefore fundamentally needs a bracha. So you say Pirsumei Nisa, meaning what? More. Come on, tell me more. And they're not the bracha. The second lighting, remember, the second lighting. Why would the second lighting need a bracha because of Pirsumei Nisa? What are you saying? You're saying nothing good, but what are you saying? And therefore, okay, so there's two possible formulations here. So there's two formulations, right? There's two formulations that I think you could have, right? One is what Adam just said, which is, look, in the end of the day, who cares why you lit a second menorah? In the end of the day, if you lit a second menorah, and more people see it, so you're accomplishing more Pirsumei Nisa. So maybe the motivation is Michrum Chshad, but Bisovo Shel Davar, if you're publicizing the miracle to two directions, you're doing more Pirsumei Nisa. If you're doing more Pirsumei Nisa, so it's part of the mitzvah, because the whole mitzvah is Pirsumei Nisa. Good. That's one formulation. Give me another formulation. I think that's plausible, right? I think there's many formulations that are plausible. Give me another one. Someone said it already last week, so now I don't remember who said it. Well, I'm going to come to you, Rami. Leave land aside for a second, right? But give me another svaro, another formulation within Pirsumei Nisa. And it's a slight twist on what Adam said, but I think Adam said is right. It's what the Maset HaMelech says. But the Maaseh HaMelech suggests a slightly different formulation as well. I think there are two very related formulations, right? One is to say, look, the reason you make a bracha here is because once you light, it accomplishes Pirsumei Nisa. It's part of the mitzvah. But there's a very clever twist the Maaseh HaMelech adds here, which is, someone said it last week, but I don't remember who it was. Okay. I don't remember who said it, but I'll say it now. It's a good svara. And that is, maybe it's even more than that. Maybe it's not just like what Adam said, formulation one, which is a mitzvah derabbanan is to make a bracha, which is the Rashba. And not even like Adam, formulation two, which is the more you light, the more Pirsumei Nisa, so the more it's a mitzvah. But maybe what? maybe chshad is a unique problem in Pershumei Nisa. Why? I think it was Yonatan, right? Which is, if the point of Hadlakas Neros Chanukah is to let people know about the miracle, so there's a unique problem if people think you're not doing it, right? Because if the whole mitzvah is about the message I convey to the public, so then sending the wrong message to the public is uniquely problematic, right? And therefore rectifying a potential misunderstanding by the public is uniquely important, right? Because what does Pershumei Nisa tell you? Pershumei Nisa tells you that the whole mitzvah is about what I convey to the public. And therefore, I have to be overly sensitive to chshad, because in a mitzvah which is kol kulo defined as what am I telling the public, so there's a unique problem if they think I'm not publicizing the miracle, and once I publicize the miracle to avoid that concern, I'm essentially accomplishing Pershumei Nisa at a different level, meaning I'm qualitatively changing the way I'm mefarshim the neis. I'm making it so that everybody knows without a shadow of a doubt that I believe in this miracle and I want to talk about this miracle and I want to convey my belief in this miracle. So it could be that since the whole miracle, the whole mitzvah rather, is formulated as what message do I convey to the world, so being overly sensitive to what the world might think is itself part of Pershumei Nisa. So I think that it's plausible to say, right, that even if you disagreed with the Rajba, and you don't think that every single time the rabbis tell you to do something Mishnah of Kshad, you make a bracha, it's possible that in certain types of mitzvah, like Hanukkah, the mitzvah of Kshad would integrate into the mitzvah, and would be Mechayer Bracha, even if you didn't think it would be in every single case. Right? Because so central to this takana is this idea of Pershumei Nisa. So I think, right, that is definitely a plausible position to take. It's a position taken by the Masad HaMelech. You could argue with it for sure, right? But I think it is a plausible formulation. Okay. Now, does anyone want to give me, again, I Dafka didn't give you the acronym on this, but let's talk about it outside. Can you give me some other nafkaminas that might indicate which formulation is right? Right? Meaning we've seen that when it comes to bracha, you could justify saying a bracha whether or not you think this is local to Hanukkah, right? Because you could say, like the Rajba and the Brichadash, that every time the rabbis institute something mishum chshad, it becomes a mitzvah, you have to make a bracha. Right? Or you could say, no, you have to make a bracha specifically here because the chshad by Hanukkah integrates into the mitzvah itself. Right? Because of Pershumei Nisa. There is yet another formulation, which is the one that Rami is hinting at, but I'm going to come back to it in a minute. Okay? What other nafkamina might hang on the question of whether the lighting of the Hanukkah candles, right, the second Hanukkah candles, because of chshad, is a general obligation of chshad or internal to the mitzvah of Neros Hanukkah, right? We saw one which is bracha, but bracha isn't a great nafkamina because, as we've seen, you could really, right, twist that in different ways. So give me another nafkamina. Give me a different way of testing this. Yes, I know I didn't give it to you in the acronym. I wanted to limit the amount of reading you had. I wanted you to think. So now think, right?
Is it perhaps on if the candle goes out when you would have to go light it?
So I'm going to come back to Kapsa Zakugla. That's a very interesting case. I want to come back to that, right? Without the Kapsa Zakugla. So here's, in the Sefer, Yerach Lamoedim, he brings two, I think, good nafkaminas to this. Okay? One is the following, and this can't be explained away with the Rajba issue, right? With the question of Chashad in general, right? This comes straight to the question of whether you think this is local Chashad or integrated into the mitzvah, okay? One. So somebody tell me, based on Masechet Sofrim, after you finish the brachot, when you light your Hanukkah candles, what did you say? I hope you said. First you said, Lahadlik Ner Shel Hanukkah, or Ner, whatever bracha you said, whichever formulation, yes? Then you said Shasanitim. Then what did you say? Before Ma'asur. Oh, so Ezra said Haner Dalalu. Very good. Haner Dalalu. And what is Haner Dalalu? What does it say? What? What is the main thrust of Haneret Halalu? To remind us about what? Kodesh Heim Ve'en Lanu Rishut Li'ishtamesh Bohem Ela Li'otam Bilvad. Is that Kedei L'Hodot Halalu? Thank you. Yes, Ezra, I want to hear you sing. Right? Go ahead. We can... No. Fine. Haneret Halalu Kodesh Heim Ve'en Lanu Li'ishtamesh Bohem. So, the Yerach HaMoadim says one of the key defining characteristics of Nerav Chanukah is that they are Asur Bahana'a, Asur Lishtamesh Bahem. Right? You can't use them. So he says, okay, are you allowed to benefit from the Nerav that you lit only Mishum Chashad?
Oh, that's
so he said, well, it depends. If you think that the nature of the Chiyuv of Chashad here is that it integrates into Nerot Chanukah itself, meaning Adam's formulation number two, based on the Masad HaMelech, which he didn't know, but Baruch Shekiven Adam, right? Right? You think that it integrated into the mitzvah itself. That this is now defined as Nerot Chanukah. So then what should the halacha be? Are you allowed to benefit? No. But what if you think it didn't integrate? What if you think that it's just a run-of-the-mill, generic concern of Chashad? That we just don't want people to think that you're doing an Aveira. So then what do you think? Would you be allowed to benefit? Presumably yes. Very good. That's one nafkamina. Another nafkamina is the one that Ezra said to me last week, which is, how many candles do you have to light? Meaning, the normal menorah, we have the minhag to light mahadrin, mina mahadrin, that we light one per night in ascending order, right? Or if you're Beit Shammai, descending order, which
we're not,
I know, but my five-year-old thinks this is the funniest thing in the world. In school, they taught him that there's a machloket. First of all, I was very surprised they taught him this, but at our own school, they taught him the machloket v'zil Beit Shammai, and he could not stop talking on Friday night about how there are these other rabbis who thought that you liked going down. You start with 8, then you go to 7, then you go to 6. Right. He thought this was the funniest thing in the world. I don't know why. But I was happy. What? No, I don't know. Whatever. Look, I'm just impressed he knew this. I'm impressed they taught him this. I don't know. They taught him that, and the story of Yehudit, and the story of Chana. It was very nice. Oh, totally. He got its own book in the Apocrypha. It's great. The Book of Judith. Totally underrated. Yes. But, so the next Nafkamina that he brings up is, well, when you light, is there a benefit to lighting your extra candles, Mahadrin, Mina Mahadrin, right? Or do you say, look, when you light your extra candle, just, you know, light it Neri Shubeto, right, the minimum, and be done with it, right? So again, he says, well, it depends. If you think that this is just being Yotze, some generic chiyuv of Chashad, so then look, do the basic, and at least people will know you didn't violate the Yisr. That's all we care about. We don't, right? We just want to make sure that people don't think that you didn't light Hanukkah candles at all. Right? And they don't know if you're rich or poor. They have no idea. Right? The point is that no matter what angle they come from in the house, they know you lit Hanukkah candles. Your main Hanukkah candles, you light Mahadran and a Mahadran. Right? And in your non-main one, you light something so that people know that you're lighting. Right? But if you think that it integrates, that because of whatever reason, Mishum Pirsume Nisa, or whatever the case may be, that the second lighting that you do is also part of the mitzvah of Hanukkah, then just like there's a benefit to lighting Mahadran Mina Mahadran on your main Hanukkah candles, there's a benefit to lighting Mahadran Mina Mahadran, and you're lighting Mishum Chshad. Right? Okay. So are we good so far on this question? Right? Of the question of whether the mitzvah of chshad here is a function of the generic obligation to avoid concern, or whether it somehow integrates into the mitzvah of Hanukkah itself. Right? One possible nafkamina is bracha, that we said maybe not. Because by bracha, it could be like the Rashba, that you always make a bracha whenever the rabbi tells you to do anything. Right? Or you could say, no, you should make a bracha, but you're already yotze with the original bracha. Because either of those would say, right, that lemaisa, you don't make a bracha. Two other potential nafkaminas, the question is there a benefit of mahadrin min a mahadrin on your candles michum chshad? And are you allowed to be mishtamish ba'ora? Right, can you use the light of the candles michum chshad? Okay? Fine. But we're not done yet. Yes, Ezra. Yeah. Probably not, because once there's one there, it's fine, right? Meaning, at the end of the day, everything is covered, right? Both the chshad and your personal obligation is covered, right? Okay. Here are the questions that I still have left. Okay. Yes. How far do people get in the story? Yes. Sorry. I mean, not if, no, if you both lit and now there's both lit in both entrances, so you've covered both bases. You both lit, and when they pass by, they'll see a menorah in every entrance. Right?
But if they only pass one entrance, they say, oh, only one family lit, and then they didn't.
No, I don't think so. I don't know. I feel like that's a bit of a stretch already. Meaning, if you lit in every entrance and everybody lit, then you seem to have knocked off both concerns here, right? The mitzvah and the chshad parts. I don't know. Okay, here are the aspects of this question that are still left. One second. Yeah.
But it looks like a single family. And you have a non-religious who doesn't care at all about us.
Yeah.
So you like in your entrance. There's even one section of that when you listen to the other. So you like in your entrance.
See, if it looks like a single family house,
yes.
So then there's no chshad problem. You just have to light your own menorah. Right? No, I understand, but now you're asking the reverse question, which is, there really is no chshad problem because the outsider looked at it and only sees one entrance. And you lit. The question is, do I have any obligation towards my neighbor who is choosing not to light? No, but you just said there wasn't a second home, but you said it looked like one house. If there's two openings, then it looks like there's two people. Well, that's the case of chshad. Right? You're saying you have to light in someone else's house. Like in the other person's entrance, because they might think it's the second entrance to your own house. I don't know. That's already stretching a bit. But, I don't know. I don't think so. But, yes, Ezra. Yeah.
So in this case, so we say but like there's a shared courtyard with one entrance, and people know that there's two houses there.
Yeah.
So if they only see one cut in the other, they would be like, someone's in light. So when you say that you should, I mean, I don't know if you guys say have to, but you should light two cut in the other, just so people will look by or like the name will be more confusing.
Okay, so these are the questions we got to. Okay, so let me lay out what we still got to figure out, okay? Here are the questions that are left, okay? One question that seems to have bothered a lot of the post-Gim, right, the Rishonim and Achronim alike, was why is it that we seem to be unequal in the way that we apply our concerns of Chashad, right? Specifically, they are all interested in the Shul case, right? That's a question that we should cover at least technically. That's one. Question two that the post-Gim struggle with is this entire sugya only true in the time when people lit outside their doors or even when you light in your windows? And even if you think it only applies when people light in the doors, what happens in Israel when we now light outside again, when most people do light outside?
Most people.
I know Shmuel David doesn't because he has a deal, because he has a thing of Ramosha Feinstein. I know. You light outside?
Of course. Well, but I don't like all of them outside.
I light usually one mixture. I light some in the glass boxes in front, and then I put like one of the kids' ones by the window, because this way I'm yotzei chashad just in case. Right, exact same thing. Because I'm worried about chashad a little bit. Yeah. See, there you go. Fancy Schmidt. We both think the same way. Overly formally on this. Like, yeah. Very good. But the question is, do you have to do that? Very good. I do it L'Rav Chedemilta. I'm not sure I'm obligated because they are facing the same direction in my house, so it's not so problematic. Okay, sort of the same direction. That's the second question I want to deal with, which is nowadays. And the third question, which is the one that Rami seems to have gotten at, and this is the one that really bothers some of the Achronim and is the key to what I keep pushing Rami off, but is the Rav's interpretation of this sugya, yeah? Which is different than anything we've seen so far, at least slightly. Is the following question. Is once you see that chashad is part of the calculus when it comes to Hadlaka Ner Chanukah, what do you say about other chashadot or chishashot? Specifically, the one that the Shul Yaakov introduces is the following. Is the Gemara says that if you light your candles and they blow out, kavta, what's the halacha? Ein zakukla, you don't have to relight it. So the Shmuz Yaakov says, but wait a second, why don't you have to relight it once you know that chashad is a thing in Hilchot Chanukah? So maybe you don't have to relight it because of the Havlaka Nerot, but shouldn't you have to relight it Nishum chashad? Because someone will walk by 10 minutes after candle lighting and see that you don't have candles there. So isn't that a problem? Right, so this is the question that set the Shul Yaakov off. Okay? So those are the three things I still want to deal with, which is dealing with the question of the Shul Yaakov, because I think conceptually it opens up new possibilities. There's the small question of comparing this to the Shul. And the third issue is how do you deal with this nowadays? Okay? So before I decide to continue now, let me ask, has anyone read... gotten to any of the sources that deal with these questions, or should we end for the day and cover all of these tomorrow? Okay, so the question is, should we pause for today and say we'll take these up tomorrow? Is that a vote? Is it a vote to call it a day for now, and we'll try to cover these three issues later?
Yeah.
Okay, the Shul one, don't spend too much time on it. I mean, it's an interesting question, I think, because it does flesh out the parameters of chashad, which, again, since we're doing this sugya partially because we were talking about chashad in general, it's worth doing. I'm really interested in the Shul Yaakov cases. I didn't give you... last question is, do you want me to give you the Rav inside? Right? The peace in the Harei Kedem, or do you want to try to figure out what?
Hebrew.
Okay, so let me just leave you with the following. The Rav is going to suggest that this isn't a generic concern of Pshad, okay? He's going to think it is a localized concern of Pshad, but despite the fact that he thinks it's a localized concern of Pshad, he's still going to think, now, let me basically set up the Rav for you and see if you can figure it out yourselves, okay? If Adam is right, like the Masa HaMelech, that when it comes to Neir Hanukkah, we really care about Chashad a lot because of Pirsumei Nisa, so then you would think that anytime there's any Chashad in Hilchos Hanukkah, that you should be worried about it, right? Including Kavta Zakukla, right? But the Rav wants to argue that it is a localized concern of Chashad, but nevertheless, it's the type of localized Chashad that will, on the one hand, tell you that you do have to light at every entrance of your house, but will also tell you that you do not have to light after your candles go out. And the question is, how could you justify saying that you uniquely care about Chashad, but only in the case of two doors, but not in the case where your candles go out, right? That's what the Rav wants to defend, okay? That very specific formulation. Again, why is it that we're uniquely concerned about Chashad when there are two doors? No, they will, meaning the two-door case, the Chashad case where I make you light by both doors. But why, if the candle goes out in your one and only door, you don't have to relight it?
Like, if it goes out, they won't see it at all.
Like, correct, they won't see it at all. Okay, that's the Shrut Yaakov. That's what the Shrut Yaakov comes up with an Ezra-like solution. The Rav wants to have a fundamental distinction between them, which is based on what Rami keeps throwing out. So I tasked Rami with figuring out what the Rav said.
What?
Rami's like, what do I keep saying that's like the Rav? I don't know. Good, what? What? Yeah, well, what about land? Think about it.
Okay.
No, not now. I want you to think about it. So those are your three jobs, are to figure out the difference between this and the shul case, to start thinking about nowadays, okay? And the third is the question of why this might be different from the Kavta of Zakukla, right? Or what it might not be. Ezra has already predicted this with Yaakov. But that's your job, okay? See how much of it you can get through. Fine, good luck.